Welcome into the KSRO kitchen. Steve Garner, along with, we have Rose Levy Barenbaum, author of the best-selling Cake Bible. Welcome to Santa Rosa.
Thank you, Steve.
Nice to have you here. And Woody, you brought Woody along. Who is Woody?
Woody, as Publishers Weekly was quoted as saying, is my partner in creme.
In creme.
Yeah, that's clear. But somebody misunderstood it the other day at the Chronicle and said partner in crumb, which is not bad either, right?
And he's worked with
he's my associate.
Number of years.
14.
For 14 years.
But long distance until about, what was it, Woody, six years ago?
5 years ago.
Yeah, that he actually came from Minnesota and moved to a nearby town so we could work better together.
Well, and Shelley Kaldunsky is joining us. Shelley is the chef, instructor, baking, and pastry program coordinator for the Santa Rosa Junior College. Am I correct in that?
That's correct. Hi, Steve.
And thank you for sitting in. And you spend day in and day out teaching baking students.
I do.
So I thought you would be on the same wavelength as Rose, who spent her entire career teaching baking. The new book is Rose's Baking Basics, 100 Essential Recipes with more than 600 step-by-step photos. You describe this as your dream cookbook.
Well, when I wrote the Cake Bible 30 years ago, I wanted a picture of every cake in the book, and that was ambitious at the time. Then I thought it would be nice to have a video, and I have 150-plus YouTube videos, but I never dreamt of having step-by-steps, which is really the ultimate way of seeing every step of the critical parts of baking.
And these are beautifully photographed. Who did the photography?
Matthew Septimus. He did all of these photos. In fact, I think 15,000 that had to be scaled down to, because we didn't want postage stamps, we wanted large enough to see.
The Cake Bible, any baker listening today knows this book. How many printings, 50th printings for the Cake
55.
Bible?
55!
Yes, it's right now doing 55.
55th printing.
Beautiful.
It's astounding. So
and,
how many?
And 30th anniversary.
Yeah.
It came out in 87, 88?
88, October.
And how many Bibles have you written?
Let's see, there's the Pine Pastry Bible, the Bread Bible, the Baking Bible, and the Cakes. I guess five. But I don't always name them Bibles. In fact, I'd never done it to begin with. It was Bert Green, who had the first takeout store in the country in Amagansett, Long Island. And he said, I've always wanted to do a Bert's Bible, but my partner, who's a minister's son, won't let me. So he said, you know, you're my muse, and you should really call your book the Bible. And I didn't accept it right away, but once I did, when my editor so loved it, I actually read the entire manuscript, 1,000 pages, into a tape recorder against the galleys and against the page proofs, because I thought, if it's a Bible and there's a single mistake, I'm going to get criticized. And I heard that even in medical books, there's a certain percentage of mistakes. So I was determined, I mean, that could kill someone, right? This will only disappoint someone.
Yeah, I mean, if there's the wrong sugar, it's not life.
It's more like the wrong amount, you know, when you put your heart and soul into, especially a wedding cake. But because of this book, I developed or gained the reputation of being trustworthy. People trusted my recipes. And it was the first book that they had weights. They allowed me to have charts and weights.
So we could spend the whole hour talking about your new kitchen, right, Shelley? What equipment you chose,
right.
Why you chose equipment. But we won't. We'll talk about the book. But I do wonder what stove you ended up choosing.
Wolf Commercial Range. Also one from Germany that is totally glass for demos. It's really great. You can see the whole process baking.
A glass oven.
Beautiful.
Wow. We photographed a souffle rising in it. It's spellbinding. And puff pastry. Deep Chocolate Passion was the cake that we really wanted to capture because I don't think the photographer ever quite got this several books back when he did a video, because it was his first video ever. Now he's doing videos for McDonald's, you'll see around the country. But anyway, you could see that this batter is like soup, and it only fills the pan about a quarter full. It was about the 20th try when Woody was still in Minnesota, and I called him, and I said, another failure, it's been baking 20 minutes, it's not going to rise. And all of a sudden, it started levitating, and it got to the top of the pan. And the secret was not beating the egg white separately. It was a chocolate chiffon without a center tube. So the fact that we didn't beat the egg whites separately, but added them and then beat them into the batter, gave them enough structure and strength to be able to raise the cake. So it was light and fudgy at the same time. I think that was my greatest achievement in chocolate cakes.
So you've been baking for a half a century?
Well, I'm about to be three quarters of a century in 2018, 19, so
yes.
I guess I've been baking since I was 19. I didn't start doing it professionally until I went back to school at night and got my master's, my undergraduate and my master's degree in food. And then I got my first job at Ladies Home Journal in the test kitchen. And I was almost 31, I guess, at the time. Oh, but I have to say that most of what I learned was in academia, you don't really learn the hands-on. You know, you just, even in Culinary Institute, they used to say you can't use butter for cakes. I learn on my own. I learn by doing it and testing. My first cake that changed the way in which cakes are baked is in the Cake Bible, and that's what made the Cake Bible such a success. It was easier, faster, and better. But I only discovered that by not listening to the rules, and when I'd read in various professional books that you can only use high-ratio shortening if you want a good layer cake, I thought, well, if I use butter and it's the right temperature, maybe that will work. And it needs to be between 65 and 75 degrees, which is most kitchens except in the summer, right? So the temperature of the butter was the only thing critical to that method.
So you're a rebel scientist. Yeah. Kind of
I never did like the rules, but I like making the rules, you know, just not following them.
That's a good quote, isn't it?
Yes. I love that high ratio method that you explain in the Cake Bible, Rose, and I share that with my students in all of my classes. And you were such a pioneer with explaining things in detail before a lot of cookbooks were doing that, and writing books that were appropriate for both professionals and also for the home baking enthusiast.
That's music to my ears, because when I approached my editor and she said, "Who is your audience, the commercial market or a home baker?" I said, "I really want both." And she said, "Well, you can have both, but you have to choose one to start with."
Oh, you've got both. You absolutely have both.
Thank you. Yes, I've seen this book when I've gone into restaurants. I see it propped right there in the kitchen. People have seen it in Kathmandu because there is some high-altitude advice, and in a submarine. I don't give advice about below sea level, but I discovered when I was teaching in New Orleans that that gelatin doesn't set well. So I wish you thought to ask the person who was on the submarine, are you using gelatin down there?
What I find also interesting is where we're talking about whether to the professional or to the home cook. We've on this tour come across so many people who've come up to us at a book signing saying, "I was in college. I used the Cake Bible to make wedding cakes to get my tuition." But so they were technically a home baker, but really doing a professional occupation, trying to make wedding cakes and doing it. And they just... And then he went and bought this book, too, because they see the step-by-steps. Say, I can see Rose's hands. I can see exactly what the batter looks like or the dough looks like and the different stages. And that's one of the beauty things about the book.
And thanks, you thought that photos were better than video.
Yes, because in a video, you can't stop it in the middle of it when your hands are full of flour and butter or whatever.
Oh, good point.
Videos are very useful if you run into a problem, like with the Genoise. You think, what is triple? And then you can watch the video and see that maybe you really didn't make it triple in volume. But with this book, with the step-by-steps, you can just have it in front of you. Most of them are on one page, but something like the pizza, I think, is in four pages because it was so important to see all those steps.
Do you have a dedicated pizza oven, too? I don't think you mentioned that.
No, but I have, what was it called again? They don't make it anymore, but a guy named Charlie Vanover, who created the method of making bread in a food processor, also created HearthKit.
Oh.
So it's stone. And of course, there are many ways around this, but this one has stone on the sides as well as the bottom.
I remember that when they came out.
Yeah.
So that's what you have for your pizzas.
Well, they actually have some really nice solutions for the pizza, and that's one of them is Loge, which makes cast iron, makes a very inexpensive what they call pizza pan. And if you preheat that and then slip the pizza on the parchment right onto that Loge, then you take it off the parchment after the first 5 minutes when you put all the stuff on top of the pizza. You get the most wonderfully crisp crust. But there are more expensive ones like the steel, which I've experimented with, and the stone, the hearth kit. And they don't work any better than this. So I'd like to let people know different options.
Marvelous. Jumping into the book, any things that we must absolutely do? If there's, cut it down from 10 to 5 things we have to do if we want to bake successfully.
Are you talking about equipment?
Yeah.
Well, as I said, with the oven, and I don't even think people necessarily need an oven thermometer. Some of them are very inaccurate anyway. Oh. If the cake or the pie or the cookie bakes in the range of time that we've given, then you know that your oven is calibrated correctly. For example, if it says the cake bakes 20 to 30 minutes and it takes 35, that's not going to be better because the cake structure needs to set more quickly. So you know that you have to either turn your oven up or have come in and have somebody calibrate it. Okay. Usually the only time you need to calibrate an oven is when it's been moved and to make sure that it's level, because otherwise everything will be tilted, you know, the batter will be tilted and stuff like that. So also I think to have an instant read thermometer, the Thermapen to me is the Rolls Royce, because it really is speedy. And when you're making a syrup, you don't want to take 3 seconds for it to get to the temperature, because by then it's burnt, you know, or overcooked.
Okay.
So thermometer. Oh, the most important, more even than a thermometer, I'm such a proponent of weight, because especially when it comes to flour, if you measure flour and if a recipe doesn't tell you how it's measured, you might end up getting 1.5 times the amount or even more than was intended in the recipe. When you weigh it, the weight is the weight.
Yes. And I love how you've accentuated that in all of your books. I still vision a day where there'll be a book that's sold with a scale.
That was my dream.
Really? Yes. I dreamed about that too. Please.
I thought at least cross-promotional. And you know what? Something wonderful happened a couple of years ago. Escali actually approached me, and they make the top scales for home bakers and the trade. And they said, you've done so much to promote baking baking by weight that we want to do a rose scale.
Oh, so lovely. It's great.
Normally it would sell probably for $90, but if it's still on Amazon for $25, because it didn't sell hugely well. But
that scale is available as this Scali scale.
You know, people think they can compromise and dumb things down and not follow directions and get less expensive equipment, but if you get the right thing, it lasts a much longer time and is worth it.
It does. I agree.
And since scales have become economical and also are not digital, and also have grams in them, we have been able to eliminate the ounces of weight
with the blessing of the editor. I mean, they so resisted this kind of thing, because with a cake Bible, fine, they took a huge leap to put in the chart and the weights, but I had to put volume first so it would be user friendly.
But now volume comes afterwards.
Exactly. But,
and what about when you teach? How do you approach the measuring?
We certainly teach both volume measurement, but accentuate the weights so that our students understand that that's absolutely the most precise way to achieve consistent results and to increase or decrease recipes, which we do all the time.
Good point.
Yeah.
Plus, it's easier.
It is.
You don't have to use all those bowls. You just put the bowl on the scale, tear out the weight.
Yes.
Next ingredient.
Right.
We'll take a break at that point. Rose Levy Barenbaum in the KSRO kitchen. It's so great to have her here in Santa Rosa. Her new book just came out September 2018, Rose's Baking Basics, 100 Essential Recipes with more than 600 step-by-step photos. Woody has joined us, who has worked with Rose for 14 years. Is kind of your, would you say, muse?
Or? I never described him quite that way. I mean, he started off, he baked some things for my book, and he baked them perfectly. And then he, little by little, learned more and more about my methods and contributed very much of his own to it. What is exactly a muse? I think of Salvador Dali and his wife.
Someone that you bounce ideas off that will tell you the truth at all times?
He's a muse.
And Shelley Kaldunsky is with us. She is the Baking and Pastry Program Coordinator for the Santa Rosa Junior College Culinary Program. I'm Steve Garner, back after this. In the KSRO kitchen, Rose Levy Barenbaum. Her new book is Rose's Baking Basics, 100 Essential Recipes with more than 600 step-by-step photos. Look, let's jump into cookies. I really like, because I'm just an amateur baker, solutions for possible problems. That was genius to start the sections with that.
Well, I don't like being negative, but I think many times people don't know that they have a problem until it's too late. You know, so I wanted to put it up front. I mean, because I remember with The Joy of Cooking, one of my first books, it said, if you need to know more about baking with egg yolks, read page such and such. And I thought, why do I need to know more? And my angel pie was chartreuse in color because I used an aluminum pan. So I thought, I'm going to have, even in the cake Bible, the information right there on the page. But with this book, because we have all the pictures, we were able to streamline the text. And it makes it much more approachable and easy, so we put it in sidebars.
Marvelous.
Or up front.
I loved reading that right away. And then baking pearl or baking pearls, if you had more than pearls, those were just insights? What were those?
Well, my husband always said that I give too many pearls when I give a lecture. It's all the little eureka things that you discover along the way. So I thought it would be nice to call them pearls of wisdom, kind of.
They're very helpful. I went to the solutions and then the pearls, and then tried to be methodical when I baked a couple things out of the book and did my mise en place, had everything in place. I tried to channel you.
But Steve, do you like this, make this recipe your own? Because so many people want to put their own touch in baking.
No, I don't care about being creative. If I can, if I could recreate it, I trust that it's going to satisfy me and my family and guests.
What a great approach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Life for me at this point is just too short to try to be too creative, too experimental. I want to be successful as quickly as possible.
Oh, you're so wise. I wish everyone were like that.
Yes, I appreciate that, Rose, because most students want to insert the creativity before they have the foundation.
Exactly, because it's fun to be creative later, but whenever I hear somebody start a sentence with, can you, I know that next dread word is substitute.
Yes.
And once in Edgar de Gustavus, I got a question about that for the banana in the banana cake. Mm. I mean, make another cake for heaven's sakes. So my editor's husband who was listening said, yeah, watermelon.
Hi, Rose.
Because we get that on our website all the time with questions about that. Can I substitute this or can I eliminate this? And you really need to bake it the way the author intended. Whoever's author it is, whether it's grandma's favorite recipe or Martha Stewart.
Well, you can always.
Because you need to know what that author's thought process is, what they're, and also establish a control. Once you have your control, then you can go fudge whatever you want to do or experiment from there on.
Yeah, at least 50% of cooking and baking is troubleshooting, I find. And so I love learning about the chemistry of ingredients. And then you can experiment once you understand what everything's role is.
Yeah, especially when you know the makeup of the different ingredients.
Yes.
Let's grab a couple cookie recipes. Oh. Did you have any favorites in the book, Shelley? Because I know mine.
Oh, we've been actually baking bread. You know, we're in bread week in my class, in Introduction to Baking at Santa Rosa Junior College. And so we're baking beer bread and Japanese milk bread today.
Oh, fun.
So that's what we're doing.
Beer bread was my first bread recipe.
Oh, fantastic. Any pearls for us, Woody?
Yes. When somebody called Rose gives you a starter.
Okay.
Don't feed it for 2 years, then make your first bread.
All right. We might be 2 years behind on
that. Jump right in. Actually, baking bread is my favorite thing to do. These recipes are actually written exactly as I bake. I would like to redo all of my books like this. Because generally, I would go into the kitchen and I think, what do I do first? You know, look at the recipe and see where it says. But here, right after the ingredients, the first thing you want to see is, do you have everything that's specified? You don't have to go running to the supermarket or a store. Mm-hmm. The next thing is what you have to soften, because the butter, well, all the things are really dependent on temperature for baking, whether it be cool or warm.
Yeah. So a difference is that where in previous recipes, butter might be the last thing gets added to the recipe in, you know, sequential order of the process, you need to have it out front. So it is now at the top of the chart in many cases because you have to take it out, warm it up.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going back to cookies now.
Sorry, Steve. Can't keep you away from cookies.
That was all very fascinating. Now, for a lot of our listeners, but I'm going back to cookies now.
Okay.
So cookies, I've been on a big powder puff kick for a couple of years. I love Mexican wedding cookies, Norwegian, Swedish, whatever nationality takes credit for this particular cookie. Mm-hmm. And I learned why my powdered sugar really wasn't doing quite well, and that is you told me that you leave it uncovered for 8 hours to maintain the coating. And I never thought to do that. Mm-hmm. And I did it, and now the coating adheres to the cookies.
I love tips. I think tips are more important than recipes. Tips are everything.
I'll tell you the thing that I do, which I really like. I use Sherry Yards, you know, the great pastry chef from Wolfgang Puck.
Yes.
And she uses brown butter in her.
Oh, yes.
And yours does not, but I've used brown butter. It's a little more labor intensive, but I think that I'm going to maybe continue to use brown butter.
I use brown butter in the chocolate chip cookies.
Yes, that recipe looked great. Rose.
My technique, thank you, Shelley, my technique for doing those puffs comes originally from Paula Wolfert about beating the butter the way she did.
Okay. And you also have a marzipan cookies, and in big letters, no, don't use American marzipan.
That was from Charlie Vanover's longtime partner who represents the almond board, and I didn't realize the differences in marzipan. And then a guy from Germany told me when I said Lübeck in the book, Lübeck is not a brand, it's a type of European. So, and there's different qualities of those. So,
It's a great recipe. I was also floored, knocked out, that you included my spiritual cookie, and that's bourbon balls. I grew up, I was born and raised in Louisville, Kentucky. So.
Oh, you're going to love this, Steve. Our next book is going to be ice cream. I already submitted it 2 weeks before we left. And a friend of mine was at the Kentucky Derby with her daughter, and she said they have an ice cream with bourbon balls in them. So those bourbon balls are real. Get out of here, Ronnie. Yeah, it's amazing.
Should we tell the title of the ice cream is?
Rose's Ice Cream Bliss.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Because that's how I feel about it.
You also have in there my best brownies. Thank you for not overusing the word best. You use it judiciously in the book.
Probably the copy editor would step on my foot if I used it any more than I do.
But that was great that you had my best brownies in there, and the bourbon balls and many other wonderful cookies. We'll take a break and we'll jump into cakes after this. Rose, Woody, Shelley, stick around a bit. I'm Steve Garner in the KSRO Kitchen. In the KSRO Kitchen with Rose Levy Baron-Baum, her new book, her 11th book, Rose's Baking Basics, 100 Essential Recipes with more than 600 step-by-step photos for both amateur bakers and professional bakers. Shelley Kaldansky from the SRJC Pastry and Dessert Department is sitting in with us to guide us through this chat with Rose and Woody. We're up to cakes. I'm a terrible cake baker, I wanted to tell you right now. I don't make cakes because I've always been so frustrated by my complete lack of success. I'm a pretty good pie baker. But
it's much harder to make pies than cakes.
You think so?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
People are so pie impaired. You see, I wanted to be a missionary. I wanted to go around the country showing how easy it is. And in fact, once in San Francisco, I was on a live show, and the pie crust fell apart that the prep person did. And I said, what kind of flour did you use? And she said, Safeway. And I said, hereafter thought of as Unsafeway. You use a national brand. The point is that if you use the right amount of flour and it's cool and you follow my recipe, it's foolproof.
Okay, wonderful. Cake comments, Shelley, about when you are teaching cake baking?
Yeah, well, I would actually agree with Rose in that cake is not hard if you have a great recipe. And usually the technique is critical, and the way the instructions are written are important. I love all of the photos in the cake chapter because I think those are key to having success when you bake cake, are noticing the visual all along the way and the stages of what your batter should look like. I would agree that pie can sometimes be harder than cake, but a good recipe.
So what recipes should we give him that he can succeed at? I would say one thing, do something in a bundt pan, because a bundt pan's very forgiving.
Bundt cakes, I have good success, and loaf pan cakes, quick bread cakes, actually I did pretty well. I just haven't crossed over to try real, what I consider professional
cakes. Layer cakes. Probably be layer cakes. Yeah.
But lemon cakes, that's my favorite. You say my favorite of all lemon cakes, I have a big star by that.
Oh, good.
I might try that one.
Definitely worth it.
And thanks for rehabilitating at least bleached flour. Seems like for years there was this, you put the sign of the cross up, no bleached flour, terrible. It's vital, isn't it, for success?
Well, for some cakes it is. I mean,
explain
if you're
why.
Not using bleached cake flour, bleached all-purpose at least. But that's where when you use a tube pan, it's more forgiving because it will support the cake. What happens is that unbleached flour has the original flour granules are like little ball bearings, so that the other ingredients just slip through them instead of emulsifying throughout the batter, and that makes it coarse. And often when you bake it, it looks perfect, and you take it out of the oven and it dips in the center because it can't support the structure. And with baking, when something has the wrong texture, the taste gets affected too. So that's why I was such a believer. But I found in all the Commonwealth countries, it's still true that bleached flour is illegal. So I have a new friend, not new anymore, but she was actually testing her recipes to try to create the flour that's like the commercial cakes in the UK, where they heat treat the flour, and she used a microwave, and I gave her a whole chapter in Heavenly Cakes and Baking Bible too, explaining how that's done. So now people in Singapore and Australia can get a cake that's, instead of being a quarter of an inch. Such an amazing community around the world now.
So basically bleaching or heat treating the flour roughens the skin of the particles so they can absorb.
Exactly. So they can emulsify and grab on to the sugar and the butter and all the liquid and eggs that are in the batter.
And I also at this point want to compliment you and thank you for your judicious use of exclamation points in the book.
You must be kidding.
Oh, no, I'm not kidding.
Because I wrote to a friend recently saying, I'm not using another exclamation point. Just assume everything has one.
No, you used three in the book. I counted them.
Really?
The first one appeared, bleach flour, no substitutes, exclamation point, page 105. That was the first one.
You're wonderful.
And I thought, this is fantastic, because I get so many books. Every single line, triple exclamation points. Thank you. Your voice comes through without having to pepper your books with exclamation points.
You know what this reminds me of, Steve, is Carl Sondheimer, who brought the food processor to our consciousness. He said in my video, my first video, never once did you say my. You didn't say my flour, my butter. So you're saying, you know, the exclamation and the my are the two things, the two sins.
I could hear a couple of people out there in Radio Land saying, are there any gluten-free cake recipes?
Yes, it's flourless. That's an easy answer.
But that was cool. You didn't try to substitute gluten-free flour mixes. You just omitted.
I actually have tried. Well, I'm not going to say the names, but I've tried several, and I don't like them. I'd rather just not have a cake that, it's usually a cake involved, that doesn't require flour to begin with, like cheesecake, the chocolate oblivion. And we have two flourless cakes in
yes,
this book,
do.
One with almonds, chocolate, and one without nuts at all.
The pure chocolate flourless cake, I wrote wow by that one. It was the only wow.
Isn't that a beautiful picture?
It's also so beautiful.
Gorgeous, gorgeous.
You want to jump into that pool of whipped cream on top.
It's just gorgeous. Do you use gluten-free flour in baking? I guess you probably do at the JC.
We do. Yeah. You know, one of the requests we get in our bakery more often than anything right now is gluten-free baked goods. So I agree with Rose that there's all kinds of classic recipes which don't include flour, and those are my go-tos for gluten-free recipes. Although we do make our own gluten-free blends and use them for a few different recipes, and certain you know, muffins or tea breads can work nice because it's the emulsification that can have an issue with a lot of the starches which comprise the gluten-free flours, which have an awful mouthfeel. Mm-hmm. And so when you use a banana or pumpkin puree, that can sort of be the emulsification that makes those starches come together nicely on the mouth.
We'll take a break at that point. Back with Rose's Baking Basics, Rose Levy Barenbaum's new book, just out September 2018, 100 Essential Recipes with more than 600 step-by-step photos. Woody Muse, Woody is with us, and Shelley Kaldansky, who is the Pastry and Baking Department Chair at the SRJC here in Santa Rosa. One of you will win an autographed copy of this book that I hold in my hands when we conclude the show in just a few minutes from now. We'll jump into pies and tarts. When we come back, and a little bit more on breads and toppings and fillings. I'm Steve Garner in the KSRO kitchen. Celebrating our 31st year here on the air, the Good Food Hour, I'm Steve Garner. Chef John Ash, not able to be with us today, but Shelley Kaldansky from the SRJC Baking Department is joining me as we chat with Rose Levy Barenbaum, Woody from Rose's Baking Basics, the new cookbook she's just released, 100 Essential Recipes with 600 step-by-step photos. And we are down to tarts and pies, and you have a fantastic pie dough recipe that I just might try.
Oh, and I hope you do.
It's pretty foolproof, eh?
Not only is it foolproof, but I think it's the most flavorful because it also has cream cheese. But unlike the original cream cheese and flour and butter crust, it's flaky, and that's because I add heavy cream and baking powder. But only not non-aluminum baking powder because it will have a really nasty taste otherwise. I mean, in a cake, there's so much else going on. The sugar, there are lots of sugar in a cake. But if you use aluminum baking powder in a pastry dough, it will have a bitter taste. And if you use the calcium-based, it will actually give extra flavor that's good. And it lifts the layers, but it doesn't lift them until it bakes. So it's not too tender to make a beautiful lattice.
Wonderful. I know you like Rumford brand. Is that one that you
Rumford's
recommend?
Yeah, Rumford's one or Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. Also calcium-based.
Anything in the pastry and tart department, Shelley, that you want to reference?
We're gearing up for our Thanksgiving pie sale. So we're all about pie these days with our students. And so we're making pie using a butter crust, but I love using a cream cheese crust as well, so I'm really excited
Shelley,
to try
your
recipe.
Shelley, what type of flour do you use in it? Pie crust.
So we use Central Milling's all-purpose flour, and it's their beehive, I think they call it. And that's the flour that we use in our pie crust.
Because I have to say that you'll see in the book that I say first pastry flour. And I've discovered since the book went to press, oh no, it's actually in the book, that you can use either bleached or unbleached flour with the same tenderness if you add a tablespoon of sugar per crust. So for a double crust pie, 2 tablespoons of sugar. And it browns more nicely, too.
I like adding a little bit of sugar in it as well.
There's a the great section on blind baking in the tart shell, the pie crust, using a large coffee filter, which was really interesting to add the beans or the rice or the weights to blind bake.
I really like adding rice because then it absorbs a little of the butter, and after a few doing it a few times, you can make pilaf out of
the
rice.
That's a Melby pearl.
I think John Ash would have enjoyed that.
He would have gone, oh, he said that'll be in my next book.
With credit, of course.
But so again, the solutions for possible problems, and a lot of people have problems with pie dough falling apart, and it's endless. You're right, pie can be very challenging.
Especially making the border. That's the biggest problem people have. And that's why I actually created what they call Rose's Perfect Pie Plate that has deep convolutions around the rim so that you just press the dough in, and when it bakes, it stays there. Whereas when you have a nice border, if you can create it, when you bake it, it often flattens, and God forbid you should have put a heavy pie shield on. I don't know why anybody ever created that. You can make a nice light one out of aluminum foil instead of buying one that's going to compress your rim. But the perfect thing is using that perfect pie plate.
And can we get that online?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Amazon.
I know that. What's the name of the website where we can get some of your work?
Well, yes, it's realbakingwithrose.com. And there's a blog, and we answer all questions, and we have all the YouTubes, and Woody really just recreated it on Squarespace, which is so great for photos.
I happened to get my new copy of Food and Wine's Our 40 Best Ever Recipes in the mail.
And I was so shocked to find myself
and
in
here,
it.
And here, since they've been 40 years, and they list the 40 best recipes they've published in 40 years. And here, Rose Levy Birnbaum, here's your recipe.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
It says, of the dozens of apple pie recipes published in 40 years, this is hands down the best. Deep dish all-American cinnamon apple pie. What a shock. Did you know they were going to publish
this? No, and in fact, I used to do more writing for Food and Wine than any other magazine. And when I found out about the 40, I thought, well, I'd like to see who's included, not even thinking I was in it. So it was just a wonderful, joyful surprise. And I think the secret to my apple pie, and I do this with all stone fruit, is I let it sit with the sugar to get the liquid out, but I don't throw out the liquid. I boil it down so that you don't have a soggy bottom crust and you have more intense flavor, and you hardly have to use any thickener, which always dulls flavor.
Now, in one of the recipes, you did use some cornstarch.
Oh, yeah, I use some. Maybe 1/3 what you'd have to use if you still left all the juices in the fruit.
And you like cornstarch the best out of all the different thickeners out there?
I think it gives the best flavor, yeah.
What do you use, Shelley?
Whatever's closest to me. Yeah, and cornstarch is often what I'll grab, although sometimes it'll be flour. I like the clarity of the cornstarch, and it makes for a clear, delicious caramel sauce from the fruit inside of the pie,
exactly.
Which is delicious.
And you have an apple pie recipe, which really, it just jumped off the page. The photo of that apple pie was beautiful. And then the apple galette, they use a baking stone for that.
Yeah, I like a really crisp bottom crust, and since the apples are such a thin layer, it bakes quickly, and you might not get a brown crust if you don't preheat the stone.
Okay, pumpkin pie, of course.
We want to talk about pumpkin pie because a lot of people get a soggy crust out of their pumpkin
pie. Yeah, from the custard.
And how do we fix that?
Well, into the raw dough, we press ground graham crackers and some pecans. The pecans don't absorb the liquid, but the crackers do.
Ginger snaps, I think, is what you used, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. That's a good point, Steve, because the ginger with the pumpkin tastes really good. You could use graham, but I prefer ginger snaps.
Okay. With fall, that's a must-do.
But an alternative pumpkin pie would be the frozen pecan tart.
Oh, yeah, because you can cut that right from the freezer, and it's delicious frozen. Ooh. And I like to use refiner syrup instead of somewhat cloying corn syrup, and I put some also cream in the filling, because if you have all cornstarch or I use Lyle's refiner syrup, then it's still going to be sweet. But the Lyle's and refiner syrup, gives a butterscotch quality to it, and the cream makes it less sweet. So the fact that you can have it frozen and have it ahead for the holidays, I think, is a great plus.
And when you say golden syrup, is the Lyle's the brand that you recommend?
That's the one. Actually, I kept it in the United States because people didn't know what to do with it, and they were going to not import it anymore. And I said, I'll give you a recipe free of charge for the pecan tart.
Oh.
And it was on the jar for a long time, and it's kept it all these years.
Great.
So I'm very proud of that. Otherwise, I'd have to go to England and have to buy it there.
Don't have to do that. There's also eclairs, cream puffs, profiterole in that section. And then pavlova, which everyone has to do. What's pavlova?
Well, talk about gluten-free. Pavlova is a giant meringue, but it's not crisp on the inside. When you make it correctly, it's marshmallowy inside, crisp on the outside, and it can be filled with whatever fruit that you'd like to do.
Mm. No.
And plus, we have a pomegranate whipped cream.
That was so beautiful. The pink, pink whipped cream with pomegranate.
Now, doing the pavlova triggered us to go back to angel food cake.
Right, because we have a different way of whipping the egg whites now, where instead of gradually adding the sugar, we put it in right at the beginning and let it sit 20 minutes till it dissolves. And the reason you can do that is with a stand mixer, because it has to beat for about 15 to 20 minutes on high speed.
That's for the pavlova.
Yeah.
For angel food cake, you can usually get by a 7 to 10 minutes, but it makes it so much simpler to do that because you're not waiting for frothing, all that. You just let it go.
Ooh, fantastic. Yeah,
and the results
are
identical, if not better.
Shelly, you filing this all the way?
I am. I'm taking notes.
Okay. We have a tip for your students, too. On the website, we do some weekly tips, and one I came up with because I make angel food cake a lot. Because I was doing an ice cream book.
We had nothing but egg whites left over.
We had to get rid of them. So to get rid of them, I made angel food cakes. I make for my bridge club. And putting that stuff in a lot of times, I'm making it on my own. You tend to use the slop down the... You're smiling. To fix that, I now put a little piece of foil over the center tube. Uh-huh. Or bundt pan, you do the same thing. You can fill your pan up, and then you just toss out that little piece of foil. You don't have to be trying to wiggle your finger around
there.
I think Nordic wear should make a screw cap for the tube.
Oh.
They never get tired of it. They never say, oh, not that again.
Marvelous.
You know, I think the secret is the ground chocolate. And when you chill the ground chocolate before adding it, it keeps the white against the dark. Otherwise, it gets more tan. But however you do it, it cuts the sweetness because angel food cake is sugar and egg white.
We touched on some of the breads.
Oh, my favorite is the 10 grain, and that's the one from Mendocino from Café Beaujolais that I fell in love with years ago.
Oh, my gosh. You go back a long way, don't you?
Can we tell how she got the recipe?
Yeah, because at the time they were keeping the recipe a top secret. They also had a cereal that was a 10-grain cereal. So David Shama, the person who wrote the foreword, to whom I dedicated the book, is a great sleuth. And he said, get the cereal, then you'll know the grains. So I got the cereal. Brilliant, right? And I had to count out and separate all the grains and what percentage.
Oh,
what.
My.
And then many years later, Margaret Fox called me from Paris. She said, we're on our last trip together because we're getting a divorce, but I think it's time to give you the recipe. I thought that was so beautiful.
Aww.
Imagine going through such an emotional thing and then remembering
it's thrilling and poignant at the same time.
They used more sunflower seeds. It was called a sunflower bread, not a 10-grain bread. So I decided to keep it with the 1 tablespoon of each grain because I think too many sunflowers have a slight bitterness, but I have to be honest and say that's the original was like that. Plus, I use oil, so it can be a sandwich loaf, and it's my go-to grilled cheese bread. Mm. Theirs was a batard with a crunchy crust. Oil makes a softer crust.
And also for you transplanted Eastern babka swirl loaf, if you want to tackle a babka, you have a great recipe in there.
Yes, and it has a cinnamon sugar filling that, when you twist the babka, makes the most beautiful pattern.
We want to mention that you're doing a demo at the Artisan Baking School in Petaluma. And what will you be demoing at the Artisan Baking School?
The fudgy meringue cookies. When we go to a new place, we like to choose something that we probably will succeed at doing because we don't know what we're going to find there. But now I know a lot more about the place at Artisan Baking Center.
Yeah.
I know I could have done anything. And I'm going to come back and do that. But this time, I thought it would be a great lesson because I could talk about how you can never, ever overwhip egg whites when you have the right amount of cream of tartar and how there's a higher ratio now of egg white per yolk, because the laying hens are younger?
We just want to mention that eggs, because younger hens are generally chosen for laying the eggs, that your yolks are now quite a bit smaller on the average than what you would normally find 10, 20 years ago.
Well, they could be 14 grams instead of 18. It
so
makes quite a difference.
We actually, in this book, for example, a cheesecake, where it might say, most authors say you need 5 yolks. We find that you might need 5 to 8 yolks, and we do put that in the charts. That there is a variable there, so you definitely need to measure out your yolks versus just...
Preferably weigh, but measure is better than nothing.
Yep. Rose, may I ask you your favorite number today between 1 and 15?
9.
Caller number 9 at 636-1350 will win an autographed copy of Rose's new book, Rose's Baking Basics, brand new September 2018. Caller number 9. Thank you for coming to Santa Rosa, California.
It's a pleasure.
Please
Thank
come
you.
Back. We have lots of fun things to do here. I know you're going to be in Petaluma, the Artisan Baking Center, and Della Fattoria. You're going to hang out there. Great baked goods down in Petaluma, too. And wonderful to meet you, too, Woody.
Thank you very much.
And thanks, Shelly,
for Shelly.
Being
here.
And Shelly.
Yes. Oh, thank you.
You contributed so much.
Oh, it's been a joy to meet you.
And you divulged that your next book is on ice cream?
Yes.
Did you know Shelly wrote a great book on ice cream?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, that was fun. Eating of the ice cream was my favorite part of developing.
All summer long, that's all we had for lunch, ice cream, every day. And I told my doctor I probably didn't need calcium pills anymore, and he said, you're right.
So you should talk after the show about ice cream.
We will be.
Okay. I can't shut up about ice cream. The publicist for this book said, can you please stick to the subject of baking basics? And I'm thinking ice cream.
So if we don't see you before, we'll see you back hopefully here in 2020.
Definitely.
For ice cream.
For sure.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you,
Steve.
Thank you, Woody. And thank you, Shelly.
Thank you.
Talk to you next week. This is KSRO. It's the KSRO Good Food Hour.